This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In the first part of this talk, on the transformative power of somatic meditation, Reggie discusses how the lineage of Chögyam Trungpa empowers us to develop a direct relationship with ultimate reality. He says that Buddhist lineages fail us when they manipulate our heartfelt longing for their material gain. This talk was given at the 2011 Advanced Meditating with the Body Retreat, held at the Blazing Mountain Retreat Center in Crestone, Colorado.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome home. I'm supposed to have a home in Boulder, but this is actually my real home. Which I realize every time I come back here. And I realize that I haven't seen a lot of people here for a long time, and this is great. All of this beautiful storm and the smoky shrine room and the fire alarm and the cold and all of it is it's the preparing us. And I know a lot of us feel kind of dazed at this point. You come in here and you kind of, your head is swimming, and it's not, it's very much part of the process. So the more stunned and dazed you feel right now with all of the driving and everything, it's good. And as usual, the lineage will sort itself out over the next number of days. This is a very interesting situation, this particular program. This was the Advanced Meditating with the Body was the first program I taught here in Crestone. In this time in 2005, so that's 6 years ago, right? Hard to believe. And it was at this program that up in the mountain I ran into Richard Gumpo, became the protector of this place, of this lineage. And particularly of this, you know, retreat situation here, you know, with what we're doing. But this is a very different moment, same program, but very, very different. For one thing, Dharma Ocean has deepened, and our sense of what we're trying to do is much more clear now. And quite a number of the people I've been working with for years and years are now teachers in their own right and traveling around teaching, and they have their own students. And two of the, probably the two lead people, Tammy Simon and David Ayazi, are both here, which is wonderful, and are going to be, you know, helping me do it. And also another, so that's an interesting development, that this lineage is no longer really being delivered in a teaching way by me, just by myself, but there are quite a number of extraordinarily gifted people who bring things actually that I don't bring, and people who speak in their own voice, and people who are, through whom the lineage is flowing in its own way, in a very pure and very powerful way. And what I think, you know, this is something I knew myself, but I think it's becoming clear to us that these teachings are, they want to be offered in this world now. And whichever ones of us are inspired to make ourselves vehicles for that, the lineage will take you up on the offer. And what comes through, although it has some of the color and you know, it uses the particular karma of the teacher, it's really not about the teacher at all. And I mean, this is something I've known, you know, for a long time, but now we're seeing it. And it's very, very inspiring, I think, to all of us in the community to realize that, you know, first we taste and touch the lineage and we feel the teachings and we see the power in our own lives, and we feel at a certain point, really, it's an open-ended journey for us personally, and how much we grow and how much we change and how much transparent to something much more real than our limited sense of self we want to be, it's available, we can do it. But also we feel often inspired to be vehicles for other people, and I think what we're all seeing now is that's also very doable. And it's just, it's strictly a matter of practicing and working on oneself, and at a certain point you become a vehicle. And this particular lineage is about, it's about something that, as you know, is extraordinarily old, extraordinarily ancient in the human soul. And for a long time, you know, human beings, as we know, because we know it from our own lives, we have a tendency, on the one hand, we experience a tremendous amount of inspiration and beauty and power in our life. But at the same time, there's this human tendency to appropriate anything and everything and try to use it to fortify our own ego and to build up our own sense of personal security and grandiosity. I mean, it's just a human thing. We do it. You know, if we have one chicken, we want two. If we have 1 acre of wheat, we want two. You know, it's crazy, but it's how we work. And spirituality, as much or more than any other domain of human life, has been an area of appropriation, particularly over the last 10,000 years. Spirituality has become appropriated by institutions and power structures and hierarchies and elites for their own purposes. And, you know, spirituality is never, it's never, you can't kill it because it's in the human soul. But at the same time, it's been appropriated and it's created a tremendous amount of confusion for the human race, that what is deepest and most fundamental in life and what is the most sacred is owned by certain people and owned by certain institutions. I mean, when you think about it, it's totally insane, and yet that's what's happened. So when we find it in Buddhism, sadly, and, you know, many very inspired people simply can't relate to Buddhism anymore as a religion because it's so, you know, it's so frankly fucked up. And, you know, the living spirituality is still there, but it's just used in all kinds of different ways by all kinds of people for their own purposes. And I feel bad about it because there's so much, you know, in Buddhism that is of tremendous depth and value, but at the same time it's, you know, it's implicated in an awful lot that goes on that isn't spiritual at all. So a lot of people that I know have just kind of turned their backs on it, and it's really sad because then what are you going to do, watch TV? So then we had Chogyam Trungpa coming along, and he, you know, his message, which I grant you is, if you go back and read his teachings, his message is pretty, it's still pretty buried, you know, within Buddhist tradition and within Tibetan tradition. And yet, there's what I call the undelivered message of his teachings. He delivered it, but it wasn't received. It was the unreceived part of his teachings. But it's there, and it's so strong. And, you know, what he said and what he taught, and mainly, you know, by his own way of being, was that the task of spiritual traditions now is to equip people with the tools that they need to have a direct and unmediated relationship with ultimate reality. And ultimate reality, you know, the minute I say that, a lot of us start thinking up there. But the, so, you know, we meditating with the body people, you know, our thing is that what is ultimate, what is most deeply and profoundly real is the life force within us, in our bodies, in our emotions, in our interactions. That, you know, life from its very beginning, from the moment there was anything, was sacred. And in some sense, you know, life is built into the cosmos. The organic molecules are already in clouds in space, and they were there from the very, very beginning, you know, before there were stars even. So, you know, our, what he said, Trungpa Rinpoche, was the task of the of a spiritual lineage and the task of a teacher is to equip people, to equip the individual practitioners to have a direct and unmediated relationship with what is most fundamentally real in the universe, and to set them free to be, to fulfill what humans can be and what humans need to be at this time. And it's very different. It's very different from the past where, you know, religions, as we know, all of them really, including the so-called non-theistic ones, have said, well, we have certain hierarchies and we have certain fixed principles and we have certain practices and we have this sacred history in the past where everything, it really happened all back there. And, you know, we're going to deliver that to you, and we're, and if you, if you're willing to adhere to our approach, then you can touch what is ultimately real. Which is, you know, that's inherently contradictory, because the only way, I mean, as we've, you know, discussed often, it's completely disempowering, really, for people to be back in the Oedipal situation of having big people who have the answers to whom we look. And that disempowers. So what Trungpa Rinpoche taught was that the most fundamental forces and energies of reality are the most sacred, and they are the life force itself, expressing itself in our life and in the life of others and in the world, in everything that is. And our journey is to see what that means for us and what kind of a human life are we led to once we start touching that very deep part of ourselves. So this is the interesting thing about the meditating with the body. A lot of people think that what this is the first foundation of mindfulness in Buddhism. You know, sometimes people say, "Oh, that's interesting. You know, you're doing the first foundation of mindfulness. That's really important. It's really important to be embodied. You know, I took care of that 30 years ago, but you know, I did a retreat. And what is missed is that the body itself is the expression of the sacred in its purest form. You know, the sacred expresses itself. For trees, it's the body of the tree where the life force expresses itself. In a mountain, it's the body of the mountain. It's the energy behind the mountain. It's the, you know, the way in which the mountain has come to be. And for human beings, the life force has expressed itself as this human form and as everything that this human form is. We have a very degraded view of the body in our culture and in our world. And the body is not viewed as sacred. One of the sort of key principles of Vajrayana Buddhism is that if you think something is not sacred, then you can't see its sacredness. You actually can't. One time I was talking with Trungpa Rinpoche about magic, and I said, you know, there are all these stories about ways in which people perceive things in Tibet, and at that time I didn't quite realize fully that magic is actually a way of perceiving. The magic is everywhere, it's rampant, and it's just that we can't see it. So I was taking magic as kind of a more external thing. And I said, you know, did people see things that way in Tibet? And he said, they did. You know, I did. And, you know, the things that you read about, they may be exaggerated sometimes, but there's a completely different thing going on in reality. And he said, but none of you can see it because you have such fixed ideas about how degraded and ordinary the world is. You're so committed to your ordinary way of looking at your body and your person and the world that you actually can't see what's going on. You don't really know. And the interesting thing about the body work is there's this principle in meditation that if you look at something and hold it in your attention long enough, you begin to realize that it's a gate. It's a gate to freedom. It's a gate to eternity. And that's the principle behind the body work, that we consider and contemplate our own incarnation. And we make a lot of discoveries, as you know. We discover that the body isn't solid. We discover that what we thought was the body isn't. In fact, the body itself is something that happens moment by moment, and it's an arena of revelation. There is no such thing as a continuous and solid experience of the body. That's simply our own overlay. The body itself is a continuous revelation. Revelation means that the ultimate reveals itself in and through what we call our body. And sometimes we're called to a tremendous sense of openness in space, and sometimes we're called to a sense of, you know, absolute and total and terrifying claustrophobia, which is energy, you know. Sometimes we run into desperation, just desperate. I've had bronchitis for the last couple of weeks, and I thought I was over it, and hope I'm over it. But one of the things that came through to me was that there's been this energy in me my whole life of wanting to run, wanting to just escape from everything. And it comes up like I want to jump in the car and put my foot to the floor and head for the Wyoming border. And I thought up until very recently it was because of external situations that I felt that. Now I realize it isn't. It's independent of that. Which is very interesting. Isn't that interesting? Like, that my way of being human is based on wanting to jump in my car and head for the Wyoming border at 100 miles an hour. That's interesting. And that's the life force.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.